Welcome to HealthCetera. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy. There's a growing recognition that stable housing is key to health and coordinated healthcare. Someone who doesn't have stable housing can be lost to healthcare providers, impeding their ability to work overtime to help people better manage their chronic illnesses. And being homeless itself is associated with myriad health problems, both physical and mental. So this has become so important that states such as New York are exploring ways to improve health outcomes and reduce healthcare spending by providing stable housing for people. But the link between housing and health goes beyond just having stable homes. Evidence is mounting that how the housing is designed is key to health. The New York State Health Foundation is funding work to design low-income housing in the Bronx and Brooklyn that promotes the active engagement of residents and enhances their possibilities for health. Leading this work is the Center for Active Design, a nonprofit organization that uses design to foster healthy and engaged communities. And I'm very pleased to have the center's executive director, Joanna Frank, join me today in talking about active housing design. Joanna, thanks so much for joining us on HealthCetera today.
My pleasure.
So let's start out talking a little bit about what we know about the connection between housing and physical, mental, and social health. What do we know?
Absolutely. Sure. So, I mean, we are actually at a wonderful time to be talking about this because there's actually over a decade of research, both coming out of America but globally also, which is really starting to identify which design elements and the qualities of those design really impact people's behavior around their choice to walk or bike, use a stair, interact with one another, have feelings of trust towards their neighbors and institutions. And so what we're able to do is we're able to translate that research into the practical design strategies that can then be implemented in affordable housing and really foster positive behavior around the amount of physical activity you're getting, as I said, the social interaction that mitigates mental health issues and strengthens community.
So that's what we mean by active housing design then?
So active design is really the translation of research into practical design strategies. And it started in New York, in New York City, actually, under the Bloomberg administration, looking specifically at fostering physical activity. So that was where there was this kind of the strongest evidence base around a decade ago. But since then and over the last 10 years, there's really been a growing amount of evidence that also links the design of housing and neighborhoods and streets and so on to mental health and also social health. And by that, we mean kind of the connections between community, trust in one's community.
So give us some examples that show the link between active design and health. You're working in two communities in New York, in the Bronx and in Brooklyn, Brownsville in Brooklyn, and Arbor House in the Morrisania section of the South Bronx. Maybe talk a little bit about how you're using active design in these places.
Sure, absolutely. So I think you can look at active design at two scales for housing. One would be the design of the neighborhood in which the housing is actually situated, and then the other is design of the actual building of the housing itself. So an example of how active design impacts the neighborhood and the design of the neighborhood would be at the kind of the largest scale, looking at how do you site housing so that it's close to shops and transit, close to parks, that the sidewalks are well-maintained and have lighting, that there isn't a great deal of litter. And all of those things at that scale really actually impact people's desire to walk and their interest in walking in the first place. And then on top of that, the actual design elements within the street, so the actual scale of the street, how wide a street is, makes a difference as far as whether people are likely to walk down it or not. But so does having benches, which seems counterintuitive, but actually having benches does encourage walking, as well as trees and access to nature actually has a really profound impact on people's desire to walk down a street, as well as what we call a visual interest. So if you can imagine a street that has a lot of small shop fronts and there's a lot of kind of light and interest and color, we are curious creatures. We want to walk down that street. We want to experience that, as opposed to some kind of big facade which is blank at the ground floor and there's nothing you can look into. And so those kind of aspects of the actual design of the street within a neighborhood, all of those aspects now have research that demonstrates that that actually impacts your likelihood to walk. So that's kind of at a neighborhood scale. So obviously the siting of housing and then the overall kind of infrastructure and maintenance of the surrounding community has a really massive impact, actually, on both physical but also mental health as well. And then at a building scale, the building of the housing. So starting with the outside, providing gardens and areas for community gardens, that actually increases not just physical activity, but also impacts mental health because of the social interaction between people. And that starts to really create bonds and actually instill feelings of trust. But what we also see from the research is that if you are engaged in a community garden, just that engagement is going to lead to an increase in your actual eating of fruit and vegetables, which in turn actually has an impact on mental health. So you can kind of see how it's all interacted, how it all interacts with each other. And then other aspects of the design of housing, which people know, if they know a little bit about active design, have probably heard about, are somewhat obsession, I would say, at this point, with stairs. Because stairs are this resource which is really underused in buildings. Typically these days in modern buildings, you tuck the stair into the corner. It's just thought of as for egress, fire, safety, that kind of thing. It has a big metal door on it. You have no idea where it is unless you need it in an emergency, hopefully. You would find it, but you know it's not celebrated. It's tucked away somewhere, and so really to kind of bring the stair back into the forefront, because it's a great way to get your minimum amount of daily physical activity, and there's a lot of research around what actually promotes people's stair use. So things like a glass door so you can see into the stair is going to increase the likelihood that people take the stairs. Likewise, if you can see it when you first come into the lobby of a building, you're much more likely to use a stair if you see it at the same time as seeing the elevator. And then something as simple as signage that actually says, use a stair, you know, it has these benefits to you, or something more lighthearted. And many different signs have been tested now, and they actually do impact people's likelihood of taking the stair. And that alone has a really profound impact on people's health if you start to increase stair use.
So let's talk about the Brownsville and the Bronx projects that you've been working on. Where did you start? What was your first? Was it Arbor House in Morrisania, or was it in Brownsville?
Yes, it was Arbor House in the Bronx. So the developer of both of the projects actually is the same developer, Blue Sea. And so Arbor House was in construction, I think about 5 years now, 5 years ago that it started construction. And the developer and the development team really adopted active design as a concept and built many of the strategies into Arbor House right from the outset. So as I mentioned, active design started in New York City, and New York City was very kind of supported the use of active design through affordable housing. Obviously, a lot of the funding for affordable housing comes from the city as well as the state and federal government. So there's an existing conduit there to actually talk to developers. And Blue Sea, the developer of Arbor House, had been involved with active design right from the start, right from the beginning of the idea of this translation of evidence into strategies. So they very graciously took these strategies, really as the first adopters, and built it into Arbor House. And then a research team led by Liz Garland from Mount Sinai actually set up a study over the first 2 years of occupancy of the housing to actually start to measure, if you put all of these elements together in affordable housing, does it have a measurable impact on the health of the residents of that housing? And there was a real focus on, would it actually lead to an increase in stair use? That's obviously something that's relatively easy to measure. You can imagine There's a lot of other aspects of health that are very hard to measure, but measuring just the does it increase stair use in this population. And the results of that study actually were quite profound, and there was a 58% increase in stair use in the residents of Arbor House compared to a control building. So obviously, if we could replicate that, even a fraction of that kind of impact, that is a really significant impact.
Now, there's also, I was also reading about including, wait a minute, I've got a dog who's out of control. I'm going to put this on pause, and I'll edit this. Hang on. So one of the things that I read about was that part of active design is also looking at perhaps at creating space and building in programs for health and wellness. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So part of the evidence-based strategies are certainly to look at how to support programming, whether that would be exercise classes or health education classes, or whether it's around how to actually garden in that space that's being provided. So how do you use that kind of understanding of what works in programming to inform the design that can support that programming? Having kitchens in the housing that look directly out onto the community garden. So, and then supporting that further by having cooking classes. So it's really kind of that relationship between the programming and the built environment that is important and leads to greater success.
So are you seeing this spread, this idea of really paying attention to design of new housing in this way, particularly for low-income housing?
I'm sorry.
Are you seeing an increase, a spread of this idea of using active design for designing new housing, particularly for low-income communities?
Absolutely, yes. That's kind of our mission as an organization, is to certainly demonstrate proof of concept in individual projects, but our mission is really to scale this so that it really starts to be the typical practice of affordable housing. So while the one-off buildings are great, what we really want to see is a systems change. And so, yes, we, the Center for Active Design, work nationally with our partners at Partnership for Healthier America, and they're also a national nonprofit looking to support children's health. And we've created a program called Active Design Verified, which is really putting all of these health evidence-based strategies into a verification program, which we then work with developers to use within their portfolio of projects. We, the Center for Active Design, provide technical assistance to their design teams so that they can optimize the spaces that they're designing without having to, you know, learn from the beginning, actually, you know, kind of all of these different pieces. So we work with their teams and try to make it as efficient as possible. And then Partnership for a Healthier America actually recognize the developers who've been able to make a commitment to using Active Design Verified, and that obviously is a great incentive for using this particular verification program. So that we use nationally. We have developers across the country who are using Active Design Verified. So where New York City was certainly the first to use Active Design, it now has absolutely spread across the country.
Now, what is the relationship of this work to LEED, and maybe define what LEED is?
Sure. So LEED is a building certification program that supports sustainable design practices, mostly looking at mechanical systems for buildings. We are not affiliated with LEED, but that would be my definition of what LEED is. So the relationship to sustainable design practices is obviously there's an overlap. Obviously, if we are taking the stairs more, and if we are walking more, we are using cars less, we are using elevators less. And so that obviously does have a distinct connection to sustainable practices. The other place that I'd say there's a real overlap is around air quality. So it has definitely been the purview of the design community over the last 10 years because of LEED to start to think about interior air quality and off-gassing and triggers for asthma and how you can mitigate that using mechanical systems. Now, with active design, we're talking about how design promotes healthy behavior. And so it's not about the building the way it functions. It's about how the way the building is designed can support healthy behavior based on the evidence. An example of the difference, I would say, obviously the two work together, but the difference in thinking is if you think about smoking. So the way that LEED or the sustainable movement thinks about smoking is how do we use a mechanical system to clean the air of all particulates? Or how do we move the person smoking out of the direct path of the entrance of that building so it doesn't get into the building in the first place? So that is a kind of that's been the recognized way to approach smoking. With active design and the work we do, it's how can we actually support behavior that either reduces the amount of cigarettes you have a day, it either increases the number of people who are quitting or reduces the number of people who are starting to smoke in the first place. And so we know that positive messaging and signage can have an impact on all of those things. So it's kind of, it's a subtle difference, but it's quite a profound difference, really.
So give us a couple of examples of how active design is helping people to quit smoking or reduce their tobacco use.
Well, so signage, there's a substantial body of research now that shows that positive messaging about being a smoke-free campus or smoke-free building actually does have a statistically significant impact on people's behavior around smoking. So that's just one kind of simple example that has a strong evidence base. And then as far as the difference between LEED and what the Center for Active Design does, we actually are the... We operate a certification program also called Fitwell, which we just started to operate. And it is a certification, a building certification program to support health and promote health. It was created by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and General Service Administration, the federal government, and we are now the operator of that. It was only launched a couple of weeks ago.
And what's the name of it again? Fitlow?
Fitwell.
Fitwell.
F-I-T-W-E-L. Yes.
Great. And people can go to your site to find out more information about that?
Yes, they can go to fitwell.org as well. We just launched the website on Monday.
Oh, great, great. And so let me just remind listeners that you're listening to HealthCetera. I'm Diana Mason, and we're talking today about active housing design and its connection to health. And I'm talking to Joanna Frank, who's the executive director of the Center for Active Design, a nonprofit organization that uses design to foster healthy and engaged communities. And they're collaborating with some folks on active design of housing in Brownsville and the Bronx. So we talked a little bit about the Bronx. What's your work in Brownsville looking like?
So the developer of Arbor House in the South Bronx, their next project working with New York City's housing agencies is Prospect Plaza, which is in central Brooklyn. And that project kind of took everything learned from Arbor House and really kind of took it to the next level. It's a far larger project. It has multiple buildings, and so you have other opportunities between the buildings and more outdoor space and so on. And so Prospect Plaza was actually the first building to open that received the active design verified stamp of approval. So it went through the active design verified process. It used all of the active design strategies that were relevant to the different buildings. And now we're able to replicate the design, the experiment that was done to measure the impact at Arbor House. We're just starting to collect pre-data around the residents who've moved into Prospect Plaza to see if those results are replicated in this population, which is very exciting.
So, Joanna, is active design with just when you're developing, putting up a new building, or can you retrofit something, an existing building?
You can absolutely use it on existing buildings. So Active Design Verified, we have developers whose entire portfolio is based around the rehab and renovation of existing buildings. So one of the developers, Vitus, they're based out on the West Coast, but they work across the country. They buy 1960s, 1970s HUD properties, and then they renovate them, and they're both for families and also for seniors. And so they've been using Active Design Verified on their buildings. What we did there was Active Design Verified in its original the way it was conceived originally was for families. And so obviously we looked at the evidence and the health impacts for families. And then we did a slightly different review of the research for the seniors, because obviously their health priorities are different from a family setting. So we really wanted to kind of promote the positive mental health aspects of living within affordable housing or multifamily housing. And so there's definitely much more of an emphasis on how to support social interaction and mitigate depression from social isolation. So it's a slightly different set of strategies that we use when it's for seniors than for families, and that just reflects the different needs of the different populations. But you can absolutely use it on existing. And the certification Fitwell is actually was developed for existing buildings, because you know that is obviously the majority of what exists already. And so it's essential that we address the existing buildings.
So what are the challenges to doing this work, to bringing active design, active housing design to both retrofitting buildings, but also with new buildings that are going up?
So I think there's a perceived barrier around cost. Mm-hmm. And so it's obviously our job to demonstrate, what the real costs are to the developers or to the funders, whether it's an agency or whether it's an individual private funder. So really important to be able to talk about both the cost of implementing active design, but also the benefits. So what are the direct benefits to a real estate developer for using active design? What are the benefits to a housing authority, whether it's New York City or any other? Do we also want to start to talk about the overall value? What is the overall value of promoting a healthier population? That's a harder and kind of intangible, perhaps, benefit, but it's a very real benefit. Mm-hmm. And there are massive, obviously, cost consequences to the growing rates of chronic disease and depression and so on in the population. So I think there is a perceived cost barrier. The strategies that we recommend for affordable housing have all been selected with a filter of looking for low and no cost opportunities. But there is still a perception that this is going to cost more, is going to increase the schedule. It's just another thing to need to prioritize. So it's also on us, I think, to really demonstrate why this should be a priority. Like, why should this be something that you spend, very precious time during design, during construction? Why should this be something that you focus on? And so that's the work that we see as our responsibility. And then the more developers that we have who've been using this, the more that they then become advocates for using active design, because it actually hasn't increased the cost of their project. It hasn't ended up taking them more time to do it. And then it's been very positively received by both the local community and also their funders and so on. So I think the storytelling aspect of this is really important, to talk about the individual stories of the people living in the buildings, as well as that overall kind of value to the community.
So have you invited Ben Carson, the new Secretary of Housing, who's working with the Trump administration, to come and do a site visit to to Arbor House or to Prospect Park?
We actually did send a letter to the HUD secretary last week with our partners at Partnership for Healthier America, telling them a little bit about the work and also, yes, inviting them to come and see what an active design building looks like. There's also a great little video that Partnership for Healthier America put together when people were moving into Prospect Plaza and their reaction on seeing those apartments for the first time. And it's really, it's a fabulous little 2-minute video of people and their reaction. So yes, we absolutely would like to engage with the new administration and talk to them about how we can elevate this further.
And if you had one request of him to facilitate the spread of this work, what would it be?
It would be to use their very substantial financial levers in order to prioritize this. Affordable housing is obviously not a market-driven area of real estate development. And so one of the ways to motivate the real estate industry would be to make this the most cost-effective way to design, using the existing financial structures that actually pay for affordable housing. So there's a great deal that the federal government could do to prioritize health in housing.
So your website is rich with more information on active housing design. How do people get to your website, Joanna?
So we are at centerforactivedesign.org.
Centerforactivedesign.org.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then to see Fitwell specifically, it has its own website, which is fitwell.org.
Fitwell.org. Great.
Yes.
Well, this is really fascinating work. It's very important work, and kudos to you all for being a leader in this. It'll be very interesting. I hope Secretary Carson does show up for a visit and pays attention to the work that you're doing and responds to it. So thank you so much, Joanna Frank, for joining us today on HealthCetera.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Joanna Frank, the Executive Director of the Center for Active Design, a nonprofit organization that uses design to foster healthy and engaged communities. You can check out their website at centerforactivedesign.org. I'm Diana Mason, and you're listening to HealthCetera on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.